The Wicked Smart Sports Guys is brought to you by SemiBatteries.com. As always, the go-to website for all your battery needs. SemiX Batteries carries a full line of super heavy-duty, ultra-alkaline, lithium, and button cell batteries. SemiX Batteries compares with quality to well-known national brands, and the best part? SemiX Batteries are priced much lower than their competitors. Flashlights, remote controls, gaming tools, headphones, digital cameras, hearing aids, smoke alarms, whatever device you need a battery for. SemiX has the best batteries at the best price for your device. You can order a 24-pack of AA or AAA heavy-duty batteries for only $5.99, or a 24-pack of Ultra Alkaline, ideal for all kinds of gaming and high-tech devices, at just $12.99. Order today and use coupon code BOSTON, that's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, at checkout, and save 20% off your entire order. Once again, that's coupon code BOSTON at checkout, all uppercase, and save big today. SemiXBatteries.com, CELMAXBatteries.com, the official sponsor of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys podcast. Thanks, as always, to Dolly Dreams for the intro music. This week, we're joined once again by Guy Boston sports writer and host of the What a Hardo podcast, friend of the show, Colin Cannata. Might as well make him a co-host of this show at this point. Colin, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, KJ. You know, I always love coming on the show, and especially this weekend, despite extenuating circumstances continuing in the world that we live in today. It was really nice to sit down and watch some football on Wild Card Weekend, and I know we got some more good matchups coming up. So regardless of everything else, I'm just excited to be enjoying the NFL postseason.
Yeah, we're going to make this a divisional round preview, but as we're previewing those games, we'll obviously talk a little bit about what happened this past weekend. But we're going to go game by game and just kind of talk about the teams, talk about what we think is going to happen, talk about the things that happened. Obviously, you mentioned this past week, a lot of extenuating circumstances due to COVID affecting these games, but in some cases made it more interesting, especially with the Browns, one of the first teams we're going to talk about, Browns-Chiefs, a matchup I'm kind of excited for. I think this is a real chance for the Browns to really cement themselves as one of the NFL's premier teams at this point, as crazy as that sounds to say. But their offense, at times, their offense can look electric and among the best in the league and on par with the Chiefs. And certainly, it did at points during that game. I know that a lot of their scores were due to just gaffes by the Steelers, especially that first touchdown where the Steelers just snapped it overhead. A lot about that game that's very fascinating. But, you know, we've seen the Browns offense at points this season really look electric. Obviously, the Ravens game stands out as well, where they unfortunately ended up losing that game. But the Browns offense can be really, really good, especially their run game. So I don't doubt their ability to keep up with the Chiefs. I think this could actually be a game if they're firing on all cylinders. Like we've seen, they've run hot and cold, but if they're hot, then this will be a real, real fun game.
Yeah, I agree. And I know it's kind of like the Chiefs are like the benchmark in the AFC. And we've even, I think, in our last episode been talking about it. Like, okay, what teams can actually maybe have a chance against the Chiefs? Like, no one's sitting here and saying, oh, the Browns are going to go into Kansas City and beat the Chiefs. But I think the Browns have entered that territory of they might have a chance. Like, if they play their best football game on both sides of the ball, they have a chance. And I think it's worth noting, obviously, Chiefs didn't start many of their, you know, top flight players in Week 17. But the Chiefs haven't looked completely elite like they have at different points in this season as we came down the stretch here. So I think the Browns have a chance. What they do with that chance will be interesting to see. But you said it. The offense is bordering on elite when Baker Mayfield's playing with confidence. And Baker Mayfield, I think, you know, every player in the NFL is kind of, when they're playing with confidence and the going is good, it kind of, you know, snowballs and they really start playing well and being at their very best. I think Baker Mayfield is a prime example of that, more so than others. He's a momentum quarterback. And when he starts, you know, kind of feeling that swag that we know Baker Mayfield has, I think he's tough to stop. And they're loaded with weapons. I mean, I think they've been better since they lost Odell. That's a story for another time. But Jarvis Landry, Hollywood Higgins, Austin Hooper have certainly gotten the job done. And then the two-headed monster at the running back position. So keep forcing some turnovers, make it a little bit difficult for Mahomes, and trust in your offense. I think the Browns have a chance, and I don't know. There's some other good matchups, but it might be the game I'm most excited to see, just to see how long this Cinderella story can go for the Browns.
And when have we seen teams beat the Chiefs in recent years? The Patriots beat them in the AFC Championship game. How? They had over 170 yards on the ground. This year, really the only team to beat them at full strength, the Raiders. They had over 140 or 150 yards on the ground, something like that. The teams that control the ball, run on them, those are the teams that are able to give them problems. And the Browns can certainly do that with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in the backfield. That's the way they've won games this season. So in many ways, this might be a stretch to say, the Browns are kind of built, offensively at least, to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that statement, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the teams that can control the ball, keep picking up first downs, but have these 7-8 minute drives. I mean, I remember when the Patriots were down there for the AFC Championship, and they came out and the first drive of the game was 7 or 8 minutes, and it was just, you know, 3-4 yard chunks in the ground and just turning the clock and continuing to keep Mahomes off the field. If Mahomes is sitting on the bench, guess what? He can't beat you. So if you can control the ball, keep getting first downs and have these long possessions, and only really have to strike on a big play when you really need a third down conversion or whatever it may be. I mean, Nick Chubb is tough for anybody to stop. And the Chiefs' defense is much improved from the perception that they used to have, that, you know, they were just completely carried by offense. But I still wouldn't say the Chiefs are a completely elite unit. And if the Browns can run the ball, I think if you can get to that benchmark that you kind of talked about, get to 130, 140, maybe even 150 and have those long drives, I think it could be a game in the fourth quarter. And I mean, we know that the Chiefs love to win games in the fourth quarter, but hey, Baker playing with a little swag, maybe the defense forces a turnover. I mean, anything can happen. The Browns have certainly vaulted themselves into the territory of, you kind of don't know exactly what they're going to do, but they're capable of a ton, and I guess capable of a stinker too. You never know.
Yeah, and I'm looking back at the Chiefs' schedule. So since the start of 2019, which includes the playoffs, they've only lost... There's four games in 2019, and some of these games might be without Mahomes, because I know they're without Mahomes at times this season. I think only actually one of these losses is going to be without Mahomes, it looks like. But obviously, they lose that Patriots game I mentioned, they lose the Raiders game, and we won't count the game that they lost in Week 17 to the Chargers. But last season, four games they lost were to the Colts, the Texans, the Packers, and the Titans. That Colts game they lost, Marlon Mack, 132 yards on the ground. The Colts in that game had, that's 160 plus another 20, 100, over 180, about 180 yards on the ground. Okay, the Texans game they lost. Now I'm looking up these up live. I don't even know if these really adhere to the argument or not. But that Texans game, yep, same thing. 116 for Carlos Hyde, 42 for Deshaun Watson, 34 for Duke Johnson. That's about, 70. That's about 190 yards on the ground, okay? They lost to the Packers, 31-24. The Packers had not as much, but still over 100 yards on the ground with Aaron Jones and a rushing touchdown in total. They had about, about 110 yards on the ground, a little over 110. And then they lost to Derrick Henry and the Titans. Derrick Henry had 188 yards rushing in that game, and Tannehill added 37, so over 200 yards rushing. So the way you beat the Chiefs is running the football, and the Browns are the best, one of the best, if not the best, running rushing offense in the league in the NFL this season. I don't know what the stats are going to say in terms of rushing yards, but I know that as a tandem, I can definitively say they have the best tandem in the league. No one has two running backs better than Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, and I think because they both do certain things so well, and they have the ability to kind of change the pace, but it's not like, you know, you see certain running back situations where you got the one guy who's kind of the bruiser, and then you got the other guy who's usually coming in on third down only. Like, Kareem Hunt is very capable of coming in thinking maybe, you know, he's going to go out for a screen pass or whatever, and then getting a draw play and taking it 15 yards. I mean, Kareem Hunt is a great running back running the ball as well as being able to catch the ball. So it's kind of tough. I think that's an element that makes their rushing offense even more impressive, is that you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. Like, back in the days, this is just the first example that comes to mind, obviously a little Patriots bias, but when they had LeGarrette Blount and James White or Shane Vereen or combinations like that, like when LeGarrette Blount was in, you're pretty sure they were going up the middle. When Shane Vereen or James White were in, you're pretty sure they were going to pass the ball and maybe look to a running back to pass. Kareem Hunt you get on the field, and it's like, okay, maybe they're going to pass him the ball, but we also still have to stay honest because he can take this ball right up the middle for 15, 20 yards any play. Like, that's how dynamic of a combination it is. So I think that's another factor that'll kind of keep the Chiefs on their toes. And you know, the Chiefs, if you give them the ball often and you fall behind, then it's going to be tough to stick to the run game. You know, it's that first quarter that's really important. If you can come out and set the tone with the run and, you know, maybe even be ahead by a score, so the Chiefs have to play from behind a little bit. Like, if the Chiefs come out and they go up 14-0, the run game is thrown out the window, like, immediately, because you're going to have to throw the ball to keep up with the Chiefs. So it's all about having a good start, I think, for Cleveland. And then from that good start, you can continue to just control the game, control the clock. And, you know, so I think it'll be very interesting. But if you're going to come out and be committed to the run, you damn well better do it well in those first couple drives, because you know the Chiefs will be firing on all cylinders on their offense. So you got to make sure that, you know, you don't fall behind and have to go away from the game plan that it takes to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah, and the Browns, third in the league in rushing yards per game this season. Also 21 rushing touchdowns. That was fifth in the NFL. So they are through and through a running team. And the Titans are too. And the Titans, I mean, you know, you're right. If you can't, you know, they went in the playoffs last season against the Chiefs, and they just couldn't keep up with them. So then that was the problem in that game for them. And, you know, they had Derrick Henry, of course. They have one of the best rushing attacks in the league, and it just didn't work. So there's certainly that element to it. But, you know, like you said, there are teams out there that have done it just by running all over them. And the Patriots did it, and then they still needed Brady to come up in overtime and make those big passes and make it the plays in the passing game. So you're not just going to beat the Chiefs by just running the ball. You need to be perfect pretty much everywhere if you're going to take them down, especially this year when they've been so good. So it's not going to be easy, but I genuinely think the Browns can do it. And after that game against the Steelers, I mean, they got to be riding high. Momentum is not something that should be taken lightly, especially when it comes to the NFL playoffs. And that game has to have them feeling good. We saw them in the locker room. Hopefully they're not spreading COVID or anything, because they've already been struck by that enough. But it looks like they'll have Stefanski back for that game. And who knows, maybe they don't even need him, because Pfeiffer seemed to coach a pretty good game himself there. But a lot of it was just the Steelers completely melting down. I mean, I mentioned this. They started the season 11-0 and they ended it 1-5. I mean, that's one of the all-time meltdowns, just from a season standpoint, looking at a big picture from an entire season, that I can remember in NFL history.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is unbelievable when you look at it. And I think, it's something with that kind of momentum and how guys are feeling. And the Steelers were riding this high.
I would venture to guess they're the first 11-0 team in NFL history to lose in the wild card game.
Yeah, and that's, you know, ignoring the fact that they, you know, just stumbled in the last five games of the season, too. I mean, 1-5 is no joke. That is a collapse of colossal proportions. And, I mean, like I said, I think, you know, they got so far ahead of themselves with this momentum, and they were so cocky and so arrogant that, you know, I don't think they knew how to respond when things stopped going well. So, yeah, the Steelers, I think it's tough to, I don't know, I guess it's still a very impressive win for the Browns, don't get me wrong. But it's tough to say, okay, they beat the Steelers, now they have a chance to go beat the Chiefs, just because of how bad the Steelers really were. But it's all, you know, playoff football oftentimes comes down to that turnover battle. And, I mean, in the past few games, if you look at Mahomes, he has thrown some interceptions. Obviously, they're semi-few and far between, and you expect him to lock in the playoffs. But, I mean, if you can get a couple turnovers, like they did last night, and actually capitalize on all of those turnovers, because that's the most important thing. You got to win the turnover battle, but you got to capitalize on the turnovers that you do get. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. But I think this game has entered the territory of, I'm not just 100% sure it's going to be the Chiefs move on, we'll see in the AFC Championship at Arrowhead. I think there's a chance. And, you know, as a fan, I'm not a fan of any of the teams left. You know, this is an interesting postseason with the Patriots not being there, because you're not thinking about, okay, who could we play? Would we be at home? Would we be on the road? Like, I'm totally looking at this postseason objectively, just as a football fan. And I think it's nice as a fan to say, all right, maybe there's a chance. Like, this game actually gets me a little bit excited. I don't just think it's a shoo-in that the Chiefs are going to run them, you know, right out of Arrowhead and into their offseason. So it's going to be exciting. A lot of big-name players in the field. It's going to be a good one.
I mean, what was your reaction watching that game? Because I can tell you, when the Browns went up 7-0, I was surprised. I was like, oh, you know, and I picked the Browns ahead of the game more so with my heart than my head. I didn't actually think they stood much of a chance given all the circumstances, all the adversity they were facing. But when they went up 7-0, I was surprised. Then 14-0, I was stunned. When it was 28-0, I was pretty much like on the floor, you know, just confused. I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. And certainly, like you said, there were omens here for the Steelers, like leading up to it, like things weren't going well. But you just figured, especially that Week 17 game, it was close and the Steelers weren't even trying. You figured once the Steelers turn it on and the Browns facing what they were facing and it being in Heinz Field, that they didn't stand a chance. If you looked at it from that perspective, you would have thought they did not stand a chance. I was completely stunned at that first quarter. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, full transparency, KJ. I didn't think they stood a chance. In my heart, something was telling me Browns, like the Steelers have been struggling a lot, and you know, maybe the Browns just kind of that team of destiny thing, and you know, first chance in so long to get a playoff victory, and that's what my heart was telling me. But my mind was telling me, okay, look. Yes, the Steelers have stumbled. Yes, they have not been even close to the same team that they were for the first 11 weeks of the season. But they have Ben Roethlisberger. They have Mike Tomlin. They have all these, you know, elite talents on both sides of the ball. I just thought, you know, Big Ben, Mike Tomlin, like, they're going to turn it around. Like, they have that veteran experience. They've been here before. They know what it takes. Like, they're going to figure it out. And, you know, then, you know, with no Stefanski, I just thought the Browns were going to lose their, you know, identity and kind of their, I'm not going to say desire, but I can't think of a better word, like just their energy. Like, I feel like that takes a lot of wind out of your sail. You got a guy who's a potential coach of the year candidate, really, and he's not there. He's sitting, and as Adam Schefter noted, sitting in his basement watching the game on a 60-inch TV. I mean, Adam Schefter down to every detail, like usual. But, I mean, he couldn't even be in contact with the team. So I thought that would take wind out of their sails. So, like I said, full transparency, I took the Steelers. And I took the Steelers actually feeling pretty confident about it. And it blew up in my face, what, within the first 5 minutes of the game? And you asked what my reaction was. My reaction was holy bleep. Like, I could not believe what I was seeing. And it just continued to get worse. It's like, all right, it went 7-0. And then I was, all right, the Steelers got to turn it on right now. And it just never happened until it was way too late. And they, you know, kind of flirted with making a push in the second half. But, you know, you dig yourself that big of a hole, it's pretty impossible to climb out of.
And the most remarkable part of all of it isn't that, I mean, I don't even think it's that they went down 28-0 in the first place. But the most remarkable part of the second half to me was that they didn't lose because they were falling apart offensively. They lost because they couldn't stop the Browns. Their offense got them back within two scores a couple of times, and they could not stop the Browns' offense. They really couldn't. And that's what I think floored me the most, was this defense that has been lauded all season, that has this insane sack streak of however many consecutive games with a sack in NFL history. And last night, did they have a sack? I don't think they had a sack last night. I think the streak ended last night.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I certainly don't remember a notable sack.
I just looked it up. Nobody had mentioned this, but I don't see a single sack on their entire stat sheet. I haven't seen it mentioned anywhere that streak came to an end, but I'm pretty sure it did. The Steelers' defense was the side of the ball that actually fell apart more so than the offense. I mean, the offense, you know, they had their own, you know, shortcomings as well. Ben Roethlisberger threw four interceptions, and, you know, that of course, that fumble that resulted in the touchdown, like, that was not pretty either. But in the second half, they showed up, and the Steelers defense did not.
Yeah, and I guess this is a little bit unrelated, but I'm still in shock that on 4th-and-1, they take a delay of game and punt the ball when you've finally gotten yourself within two scores and have a chance, you have some momentum. I think that's a decision that'll be questioned, but you're right. I mean, the Browns, albeit there was, you know, some help from the defense, but the Browns hung 48 points. They almost had a 50 burger against the Steelers. I mean, it was just not even in the realm of possibilities when I thought of what could happen in this game. I mean, I was thinking if the Browns win, it's going to be that, you know, theory that we talked about that they'll have to use against the Chiefs. They're going to have to control the ball and hope that, you know, the Steelers are a little bit stagnant on offense and stuff like that. And they just came out. I mean, Baker Mayfield was comfortable all night in that, like I said, with him, when he's feeling himself and he gets that swagger. I mean, no sacks. You just looked it up. He was just comfortable in the pocket. He was able to do what he needed to do, you know, use the running game, throw the ball to the running backs. I mean, it was really unbelievable, and it shocked me. Like I said, I was kind of just sitting there scratching my head like, oh my God, I I can't believe this. But it was just the exact opposite of what you expected. If you told me the Browns were going to win, I was not going to tell you that it was because they, you know, scored 48 points. So, you know, that just shows you anything can happen in the NFL postseason. And we definitely saw an example of that last night.
Yeah, and people said it was a regular season streak, so it didn't technically end the sack streak, but it, for all intents and purposes, it did. They didn't get a sack last night in the game where it mattered most. And the Browns were missing a few of their best linemen. I know Joel Bitonio, he was out for that game, and they still couldn't get any pressure on Mayfield. And certainly part of that is definitely the Browns' excellent run game, forcing them to adjust and their defensive line to play differently than they usually do. But that was definitely, it was one of the most stunning NFL playoff games I can remember. I don't know if you can remember anything that compares to what we saw in that game, the kind of upset. I mean, but it just for a multitude of reasons, not just what the Browns were facing as a team, but as a franchise for years and years to have this aura about them that, I mean, we've seen it with the Bengals. The Bengals have gotten in the playoffs. You know, they got in the playoffs many times in the early 2010s. They just could never win. And they haven't won a playoff game since 1990. And it's because they're the Bengals. And it was what Juju said before the game. The Browns is the Browns. And the Browns are gonna do what the Browns do. Lose. And it felt like that was a little bit of the case. It certainly feels like something has changed in Cleveland. Obviously, the fact that they've even made the playoffs for the first time in almost two decades plays into that as well. And the culture kind of shifting. But I think that there was an element of, well, now come playoff time, are you going to be able to do it on the biggest stage? Or is it going to be too big for you? Is it going to be, you know, just because you're, I mean, we've seen it before. The lights get too bright for some players and some teams. And for the Browns, it did not. It seemed like, I mean, the Steelers were the ones who looked like they shrank to the moment.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think, first and foremost, I don't think, I'm a firm believer and, you know, I'm in the Belichick school of fandom when it comes to football. You can't give a team bulletin board material. It's just, it's dumb, it's ill-advised. And there's no, like, for Juju Smith-Schuster to say that, there's nothing that the Steelers can gain from him saying that. There's a ton that the Steelers can lose from him saying that. A, just to have it blow up in your face after you get pretty much embarrassed. I know that, you know, the final score was an 11-point game, but they get pretty much embarrassed at home in the playoffs and have that comment completely blowing up in their face. And, you know, I think there are even Steelers fans who have turned on Juju after that. But you just can't motivate a team like that. Like, you can't give a team something like the Browns, like, oh, the Browns is the Browns. Like, we'll show them who the Browns are. Like, and that's what they did. Like, maybe a comment, whatever, maybe I'm buying in a little too much and it doesn't actually make that much of a difference in the flow of the game and the execution of the game. But I mean, like I said, there's nothing you can gain from saying it. There's certainly plenty of stuff that you can lose from saying it. So that was just flat out dumb. And I've officially scratched Juju Smith-Schuster off the list of potential Patriots receivers if they actually spend money to get one. I do not want that guy. And I'm sure Bill Belichick doesn't want that guy after what he just heard. But like I said, maybe I'm buying into it too much, but it simply was unbelievable. And the Browns rose to the occasion. Baker rose to the occasion. Like, I'm genuinely happy for Baker. I think Baker's a guy who catches a lot of crap from the media and people, you know, kind of saying, like, he's a phony. He doesn't actually show up when it matters. And he's not a good leader. Like, he led his guys to one heck of a performance last night. When you don't have your head coach, it comes down to the leaders of the team that are on the field. Obviously, there's other talented coaches in the coaching staff, but you need guys like Baker and Myles Garrett and Nick Chubb and Jarvis Landry and those guys to step up. Baker stepped up, and you got to tip your cap to him. And like I said, I'm happy for him. I'm not like a Baker fan. I'm not a Baker fan. I don't really care, but I just like to see a guy who's been scrutinized so much say, hey, man, like, I can do this and I'm going to do it and, you know, seize that bright moment that was in front of him.
Yeah, his attitude and his persona has been something that has seemed to rub a lot of people the wrong way. I've always loved it. He's always seen like a guy that, you know, has a lot of passion to him. And I've always really appreciated that about Baker. That's why I've always been a fan of Baker since I found him. He just loves football. He loves to win. And he's excited about it. And he gets excited about football. And I've never understood why people have pushed back against that. It's like, you should want a guy like that. That guy, that's why his teammates love him so much. That's the kind of guy you want to be a leader. Because he gets other people fired up to play and fired up to play with him. And that's what I've always loved about Baker Mayfield. And I don't understand why people, you see, you're right. You see so many people push back about that. not just nationally, but even some people in Boston I know are like really, you know, anti-Baker Mayfield people. And I'm like, I've never understood it.
Yeah, I don't get it and I won't get it. Like, I like a guy who's a fierce competitor. I like a guy who kind of wears his heart in his sleeve. And, you know, you got to respect Baker, actually, when you look at it, because he's known for years that really since college, like the one that pops out is Colin Coward's always making jokes about him. And they kind of have this back and forth type deal going on and whatever. But Baker, he's like unapologetically himself. He's like, I'm going to continue to be me and I'm going to hope that the results come to back up who I am. And guess what? The results came. There are a lot of people who are, you know, eating their words today who said Baker Mayfield couldn't do it. And Baker Mayfield, you know, keep doing your commercials, Baker, this and that. And you know what? Now he knocked out the number two seed in the AFC and he's going to play Kansas City and Arrowhead. So he proved himself. He proved to everybody that, you know, he does have what it takes. And for that, I tip my cap to Baker Mayfield. And I certainly hope that some other people, even if they were on the wrong side of that trend and were, you know, giving it to him for the past few years, they can tip their cap and say, wow, you know what? The guy really showed up and put his money where his mouth is.
Okay, who are you picking in this game? Chiefs, Browns. I'll give you the line just because I know it's hard to pick against the Chiefs. We all obviously, a lot of us at least, are pulling for the Browns. Great story. But they got the Chiefs minus 9.5. So give me your prediction for this, how this game's going to go.
I don't think I'm going to be the only person to do this. I'm going to go Browns plus 9.5. I mean, I ultimately, do I think the Chiefs will win the game? Yes. But like I said, the Chiefs haven't been like downright incredible down the stretch of the season like they usually are, where they're just scoring so many points and they're blowing teams out by 2-3 scores. You know, with a line like that, like, so I'll be honest, I hadn't seen the line yet until you just said it to me. I would have guessed, I was thinking like 7.5, like they'll pop it just over the one touchdown. So people can't just all jump on the Chiefs saying, all right, the Chiefs are going to win by a touchdown. But 9.5, I know they're keeping it under the 10, but that's a decent amount of points. And I guess I'm just believing in what we talked about already. The Browns, if they can control the clock, like, it's going to come down to the fourth quarter. And yeah, do I expect the Chiefs to pull away? Because that seems to be what they always do. I do, but I don't know. 9.5 is too many points for a team that's playing with as much confidence as the Browns will be. And, you know, I think they have a chance to keep it within that one score and even have it be, you know, a 3-4 point game.
Yeah, and if you remember, the Browns were actually the team that we were talking about having a negative point differential heading into the playoffs, and it ended up that they were just at zero heading into the playoffs instead of negative. But they, they were a team that we've seen would either win close or get blown out. You know, that was the reason that their point differential was so skewed. And maybe that's what Vegas is kind of banking on here, is that the Chiefs are just going to get up big on them and they're going to fold, which certainly is a possibility. But as I said, I think the Browns have the offensive formula to hang with or beat the Chiefs. I really think they can, and I think that's what we're going to see in part from that game. I think we're going to see a very, very effective run game. I mean, and the Chiefs are going to know that's what the Browns are going to want to do, so we'll see if they have some sort of counter to that. But they've always been susceptible to the run, and it's hindered their offense, kept them off the field. Stuff you've heard before about great offenses. You might feel all that stuff. I think the Browns can do all that. All right, let's move on to the second best game, in my opinion, of the, maybe some people would say this is the best game of the upcoming weekend, and that's going to be Saints-Buccaneers. This is a game, a rematch, of course, of the two regular season matchups they had. The Saints won both, and I wanted to look this up ahead of time. I couldn't find it anywhere. I wanted to see the history in the NFL of division rivals going up against each other in the playoffs, because I have this thought in my head. I feel like there's a kind of pattern in these games where the team that sweeps in the regular season usually struggles more in the postseason matchup, that it's hard to beat a team three times in a single season. I don't know if that's something that you that follows any logic for you too, but I feel like that's something I've heard before. But I really think the Bucks, I think that the Saints might be a little unprepared for what they're going to see from the Buccaneers this weekend, and I think that the Bucs have a real chance in this game.
Yeah, first and foremost, KJ, I completely agree with that statement, and I think that's kind of just like an unwritten kind of trend that you hear in football. It's tough to beat a team three times, really, at any level. And you know, to do it the way the Saints did it, that I remember, I can't remember exactly what week it was that primetime game. Everyone was all juiced up to watch the Saints and the Buccaneers, and the Saints came out and they just absolutely slugged them.
I think it was the first game that the Buccaneers had Antonio Brown, if I remember right. Or maybe it was the first game they had
It certainly was. I actually remember that. You know, that added to the hype that was going into that game. And the Saints came out and they just slugged them in every aspect of the game. Tom struggled turning the ball over, and, you know, the Saints were capitalizing. But I think, again, like, the Saints haven't stumbled like the Steelers have, so I think that's unfair to put them in the same sentence. But the Saints just don't feel the same to me as they felt back then. You know, whether it be Drew Brees and kind of losing Drew Brees and then finding your identity with Taysom Hill and then going back to Drew Brees. And trust me, there's no disrespect here from Drew Brees, although Tom Brady, far superior, and I hate that there's still arguments about that. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the Saints being at least somewhat of what they are capable of being on offense. I mean, I know the Bears' defense is good, but did the Saints' offense really excite you yesterday? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't really all that impressive. And like I said, you got to give credit to the Bears' defense. They're a good unit, and they always have been for the past couple of years. But I just don't feel that, like, it factor with the Saints. And, you know, the Bucs, yeah, they actually had a decently close game against the football team, but that, I think that's more credit to the football team than it's a knock on the Bucs. I mean, Taylor Heinicke played phenomenal for a guy who was just stepping in. Really, nobody expected him to be in that situation if you asked us a few weeks ago. But I think the Buccaneers have a legitimate chance. I'm with you on that, and, like, I guess I'll wait till the end, but I may be leaning towards the Buccaneers. Like, it's just... it's something about Tom, and I know it's a bias because, you know, he gave us New England fans six rings, and then when time came for him to turn it on, not that he hasn't had it turned on, but he just reaches this new level, and I think the motivation is at an all-time high, both to do it without Belichick and the Patriots, but also a guy that he's often put up against in Drew Brees and all these talk show arguments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think the motivation is as high as possible for Tom Brady, and, you know, I've... but been, what, 22 years? I haven't really bet against Tom Brady yet, so I don't exactly see myself starting now.
Yeah, I feel the same way you do. I feel as though there's going to be a desire on Tom's part greater than the one on Breeze's part to top the other guy, which would be kind of the opposite of what you'd think, because you would say Breeze needs it more maybe for legacy purposes. Brady doesn't need to prove anything else. Breeze maybe does. But from Brady's standpoint, just knowing the kind of competitive guy he is, I can see him being obsessed with the idea of I have to top Drew Brees, even though nobody logically would ever pick Drew Brees over Tom Brady in an all-time argument. But he might feel as though that, you know, he's losing some sort of, he's losing something just by losing to Brees, and he will, and he'll become obsessed with it. And, you know, I think that's what's going to drive this game. And I hesitate to say this because I don't want to ever give a team this kind of excuse. But I also feel as though maybe the Buccaneers were playing a little bit of possum in the regular season against the Saints when they played in their games. I just, you know, I genuinely think, I mean, they were also figuring some things out, so that has to play into it too. It wasn't totally, you know, they weren't, it's not like they weren't trying. They were trying to figure out, you know, how their offense worked and everything like that. But I don't think, I think the Buccaneers are far, far closer to a team that can beat the Saints than one that can only put up 3 points. I mean, that offense... that is absurd for the offense to have only put up 3 points when you're talking about Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Rob Gronkowski, Chris Godwin. I mean, one of those guys should be able to get open every single time. You know, that, I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. So I think we're going to see a different Bucs team against the Saints than we saw in the regular season. And I'll just say it now. I do agree. I think that they're going to win this game. I think I would pick them. The line going into it is Saints -3.5. It's the second closest line of the weekend. So I think that I definitely would take the Bucs there. I can see this game coming down to the wire. I could see it coming down to, you know, Tom Brady having to make one final drive perhaps to put the Bucs ahead at the end. But I think it will be the best game of the weekend. The only one that's closer is Bills Ravens. I think Bucs Saints is going to be better than that. I'm excited for Browns Chiefs too, but as we're talking about it, it's just that game with the Breeze-Brady storyline is going to be great. And what I'm hoping eventually turns into a Brady-Rodgers matchup in the NFC Championship game, because that would be, if Breeze-Brady is marquee, Brady-Rodgers would be one of the all-time matchups in the NFL playoffs.
Yeah, and how poetic would that be? I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but if he could knock off Breeze and Rodgers to get to another Super Bowl, I mean, that would just be beyond incredible, and I'm honestly rooting for it. Like, I'm not one of these spiteful Patriots fans.
Especially considering that we're going to be seeing him go up against the presumed MVP Aaron Rodgers. Like, this would be Aaron Rodgers' MVP season. So if it's MVP Rodgers versus Brady at 43, whether he beats him or not, that game is going to be spectacular.
Yeah, 100%. And there'll be no excuses from the Rodgers people. Like, oh, you know, Rodgers doesn't have weapons this year and this and that. Like, this is the best Aaron Rodgers you're going to have. And, you know, Tom Brady, like you said, mid-40s. It's so loaded with great storylines in the NFC right now. And that's another reason I'm pulling for Brady. I mean, not to mention Drew Brees versus Aaron Rodgers still would be a phenomenal game with good storylines, but it's just not the same. And the last thing I want to say about this game is we talk about momentum. We talk about teams heading into the postseason, you know, feeling like they're at their best. Well, in the last, I think, five regular season games, Brady went over 300 yards four of the times. Since they put up that 3 points against the Saints, they haven't scored less than 26 points in a game, with a couple 30s and then, you know, the 47 against Detroit, the 44 against Atlanta in the last two games of the season. They scored 31 against the Washington defense that people were really pumping up. And, you know, Brady, 381 yards. Like, I think you're playing as good a football as you can possibly be playing right now, finding a way. Like you said, you got so many weapons. Somebody's got to be open. Somebody has to be open. And I think they're finding a way to execute on that. So the Bucs are hot. The Bucs are feeling good. And you don't want Tom feeling good in January. It's usually a recipe for disaster for whoever's on the other side of the field against them. So I love the Bucs in this spot. And, you know, you said, what, +3.5? Bucks money line. You heard it here first. Bucks money line.
Wow. All right. Bills and Ravens. Two, I would say, of the most controversial quarterbacks in the league. Controversial good quarterbacks, I would say. Both these guys, you know, Lamar winning MVP last season. Allen in the conversation this season, certainly. Fortin's had a great season. But for as good as these guys are, they have a lot of detractors. A lot of people that don't think they're that good, think they're, you know, playing over their heads a lot of the time, and eventually you're going to fall off. One of these guys is going to be in the AFC Championship game. So, I mean, how do you look at this game? I'm really excited for the Jackson-Allen battle and see maybe which one shows up and which one folds, because genuinely going into this game, I would be surprised if both of these guys played well. I feel like one of these guys is maybe going to lay an egg on Sunday or Saturday, whatever day this game is being played.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. I saw on Twitter last night, 3 out of the 8 quarterbacks left in the postseason are from that same draft, in Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, and Lamar Jackson. So, you know, all three of those guys have been scrutinized at all different types of levels throughout their, you know, young careers still. So I guess it's good for those guys to be putting that draft class on the map. And, you know, a lot of people had their doubts about all three of these guys, and all three of these guys are producing and are, you know, knocking on the door of making a Super Bowl run. So tip the cap to all three of those guys. But I would agree with you. Like, when you come into a game like this, I feel like there's just a chance that one of them, and I think this is a phrase that I've gotten from you, turns back into a pumpkin. Like, the clock strikes midnight and they turn back into a pumpkin. And I actually was starting to worry about that a little bit with Josh Allen there at one point in that Titans game. The Colts game. And then they figured it out, turned it back on, you know, got the offense going that they needed to. But I don't know. And the thing with Lamar Jackson, it's like he only needs to throw for 150 yards passing, because he's going to run for 100.
You saw in the Titans game, that first pick he threw, it was like, oh boy, here we go. Lamar Jackson's choking in the playoffs again. Like, that's what it felt like. It felt like that throw. And they said it a couple times on the broadcast after that throw. That was a bad throw. That was so far off target. They were like, oh, he was 7 yards off there. And you felt like, oh boy, is Lamar Jackson choking again? And then the rest of that game, he was pretty good, and he had some great runs. And it seemed like maybe people were worried, like, maybe his running was going to be less effective in the playoffs. It was not in that game. He was spectacular. He really was the reason they won that game with a few of his runs. But when it started off, it did not look good. That first pick he threw looked bad. It looked like things were going to go bad.
Yeah, and you fall down by two possessions. And I think that's another interesting part about this upcoming game. is that both Allen and Jackson, I think there were a couple moments in this past week where people were like, oh boy, like, is it going to happen? Are they going to fall apart? And they were able to keep it together and able to bounce back and able to still find a way to go win the game. So that's, you know, a positive for both of those guys. But, you know, now the stakes are higher. The opponents are probably a little bit better. It's going to be difficult. But like I was about to say with Lamar, like, Lamar really only needs to throw for like 150 passing yards, because if he can keep running, like, I don't have the stats in front of me, but he's like almost a lock for over 80 yards and sometimes even up to like 120, 130 yards rushing. So if it's again, it goes back to game flow. If they can be in a position where they can do that and they don't, I think that's been, you know, I'm no rocket scientist here. I think everybody's been saying that about the Ravens for a long time. If they fall behind, they're in trouble. Well, they fell behind against Tennessee and they were able to figure it out, but they didn't fall too far behind that they had to abandon Lamar's legs. And you saw the big play that got them back into the game was Lamar on third down, taking the ball 50 yards to the pylon for a touchdown. So if they, you know, I'm torn on this game. I still think the Bills, I've said it since before the postseason, I'll, you know, continue to say it. I think the Bills are the second best team left in the AFC behind the Chiefs, but I think the Ravens are very capable of beating them because Lamar is just that dynamic that, you know, if you let him start cooking with his legs, it's like almost impossible to stop. It really is.
Yeah, and you kind of just alluded to this, and we've talked about momentum already a bunch on this podcast, but in the games this season, Lamar Jackson, 15 regular season games, obviously, and his playoff game. In the first 10 games of the season, he had two games over 80 rushing yards. Only two in the first 10 games. Over his last six games, he's been over 80 yards rushing in five of them. So he is riding hot going into the playoffs too. So it's gonna be tough for the Bills to contain him. We've seen the type of guy he is, and the way he moves is just unlike anybody I think we've seen at the quarterback position. Maybe Michael Vick, but even, I mean, I think his own teammate mentioned it. They mentioned it on the broadcast. The safety, I forget who it was, one of the safeties on the Ravens said that he doesn't slow down. When he jukes, he does not slow down. He stays at full speed, and that's what makes him so impossible to tackle. So it should be a great game. But yeah, like I said earlier, Jackson and Allen both have a lot of doubters, and I just wonder who's going to end up proving that guy wrong. I mean, it's weird because they have so many. I mean, it's kind of, they in many ways they pass the eye test, in many ways they don't. The way you see Jackson throw the ball, some people don't like that. Allen makes a few boneheaded plays here and there, and people are like, what are you doing? But then when you look at the statistical test, they check out, and even Jackson and Allen, I think they both have, I think they've both not thrown a red zone interception since they've gotten into the league. They're both like perfect in the red zone, which is a weird, you know, obscure stat for both of them. For guys that people don't like, they're so effective when they get into that area. So this is probably, as I look at it, Brady and Breeze is kind of the battle of the two older, you know, statesmen of the NFL, the two elders that are kind of battling it out for maybe one last time. And this is like the new flashy guys that play a different style and they're, you know, breaking new ground in the league. And this is the inverse of that matchup. So I'm really excited for that element of it as well.
Yeah, so the last thing I'll say about this game and kind of centering around Lamar is I think they were trying, you said that stat about the first half of the season, the second half of the season with the rushing yards. I think the Ravens were trying to like turn Lamar into something that he wasn't to, you know, possibly, like they always say it, like the mobile quarterback isn't going to hold up and have a long career. So like, all right, let's try to turn him into more of a passer and only really run when he needs to. Well, I completely disagree with that because you have to just do what works now. You can't think about 5-10 years down the road and preserving Lamar Jackson. Like, Lamar Jackson is so dynamic at what he does that it was senseless to try to turn him into something that he wasn't. And I think the Ravens realized that, and they, you know, they kind of hit that rough patch in the middle of the season where they were like, there was even a question if they were going to make the playoffs, like, you know, mid to even late season, are they going to make the playoffs? And they had to just go back to what works. And we saw what works last week. Let Lamar run. And if they do that, I think that the Ravens have a really good chance in this game. But Josh Allen, he's hot. Josh Allen's been really good. And, you know, the Bills are just loaded with talent on both sides of the ball and so well coached. This game is probably, for me, the biggest toss-up. Like, on those first two games when you said the line, I kind of had my gut feeling immediately. On this one, I'm like, it's bouncing back and forth in my head like ping pong. Like, I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, I'll give it to you again. The first 10 games of the season, only two games with over 80 rushing yards and a total of three rushing touchdowns. over the last six games, five of them have been over 80 yards, and he has five rushing touchdowns, two more than he had in the 10-game sample size. So he's really turned it on here late, and you're right, it should be a great one. It's the one thing I love about all these matchups, any of these teams would make for a great Super Bowl storyline. You know, the Bills and the Browns have their, you know, droughts to go from. That like, those are great storylines always when a team has a really long drought. And they're exciting teams to watch, and they both got eccentric quarterbacks that have big personalities that you love. Like, those are great. The Chiefs, obviously the juggernaut, the reigning Super Bowl champion, that's fun. The Lamar Jackson, the last MVP with the Ravens, and the everything with him and how controversial he is as a player, that's fun. Brady and Breeze both have the elder kind of, you know, this might be their last shot at it, maybe one last shot at a championship. That's like, those are great. And Brady, of course, has the other elements to it, too, of being with a new team. Breeze, this might really be his last run. Nobody thinks this is Brady's last year, but this might be Breeze's last year. So Brady, all this stuff of, you know, trying to prove it that he can win without Belichick and prove he can win a Super Bowl and all this stuff. Rodgers winning the MVP this year, and can he finally get back to the mountaintop and win his second? Like, all these teams, maybe except for the Rams, who even that, like, you know, Sean McVay's kind of fun, but they have the worst storyline of anybody in the playoffs. Everybody else, to me, has a great storyline, which I'm so excited about, because usually you don't see that, or a lot of years you don't see that. Like, remember the year that we had, like, the Eagles and the Vikings? And I know people love the Nick Foles thing. Like, I just didn't find it interesting. Like, you remember the championship games? It was Eagles, Vikings, and Jaguars, and the Patriots. And, like, three of those teams, I was like, these aren't interesting. Like, I can't.
It was Case Keenum, Blake Bortles, and Nick Foles. Like, it was.
Yeah, I was like, right. I can't sink my teeth into any of these. And it seemed like very, like, you know, just very down, like, very depressing kind of matchups. All of these I'm really, really into. Like, I think all of these are great, except maybe the next one we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, besides the Rams, you kind of, there's not a team that could make the Super Bowl where you would be, like, disappointed. You know what I mean? Like, every single team brings, or even, you know, players on these certain teams bring something to the table that'll be great to talk about and be great to break down, and just create excitement. And I think at this point, like I said at the beginning of the show, we've got extenuating circumstances in the world we live in today, and just that excitement and something to look forward to and talk about and not talk about all the bleak stuff that's going on out there. It really means a lot to football fans, even if you don't have a dog in the fight. So I'm really excited. These next few weeks are going to be phenomenal and just action-packed with good stuff to talk about and break down.
So Bills -2.5. I'm actually going to pick the Ravens. I think that they just have a little bit more experience, and it's going to help them out in this game. I still think Josh Allen, you know, he had that whole game when he really went up against another kind of electrifying quarterback last year and had that QB battle with Deshaun Watson. I think the moment got too big for him. The lights got too bright. Don't think the lights are too bright when you're going against a team like the Colts, and that game wasn't very, you know, there wasn't much buzz around that game. But this game, there's going to be a lot of buzz, and I think the moment might get a little too big for Josh Allen, and I'm going to go ahead and pick the Ravens for this one.
So I guess I've been riding the Bills, saying that I think they had the best chance. I'm going to continue to do so, and I'll tell you why. I think it's only for me because it's below 3. If I could get the Ravens at +3 or +3.5, where you wouldn't lose if they lost by a field goal, but I'm going to take the home team. I'm going to take the Bills. How many teams of quote-unquote destiny can you have in one playoff like right now? It's crazy. But I guess I'll stick with the Bills on that one.
I think it's going to come down to a field goal, and I think it'll go wide left or something like that.
History would tell you it goes wide left if you're a Bills fan.
Yeah, I just think a Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and AFC Championship game is what the league wants, and I think that's what I think we're going to get. Not saying the league will force it that way, but I think that's what we're going to end up seeing, and it'll be great. All right, then the last game here. Not a lot to say about this one. Rams-Packers. Like I said, the Rams, they wouldn't be as bad as some teams. Like, it wouldn't be as bad to me as I just mentioned, like, if the Jaguars or the Vikings made the Super Bowl or anything like that. But, I mean, the Vikings would have had some fun storylines, too, because they've obviously never won and everything like that. But the Rams, at least, you know, they would have the whole thing of, well, they're back there after they completely laid an egg the first time. Jared Goff, Sean McVay, Aaron Donald. Like, there's still some good stuff there that you can have fun with. Especially, say, if it was like Rams-Chiefs, because I know we had that game a few years back that was so spectacular, and people were hoping you would see that rematch in the Super Bowl. So maybe we could see something like that, and obviously you'd have a lot of fun playing back that game and rewatching that, and there'd be something there. But by far, like I said, there's just so many other good teams and fun teams here that we can talk about, that the Rams are just, they're not in that mix. And to me, even if the Seahawks won, the Seahawks wouldn't have really been in that mix either. Seahawks, I've seen this movie too many times, man. I know there's just a few different characters, but it's still Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, and I'm getting tired of this. So even if they won, I would have felt like, I don't know about this. But yeah, I think that I don't have a ton to say about this game. I think the Packers probably win this game pretty handily, especially if Jared Goff is banged up. And look, Aaron Rodgers, he's the MVP, and he's going to be the MVP for a reason. I think he has the Packers as a team, and him, obviously, if you go by whatever qualifiers you need to make it, the most passing yards in the league and most passing touchdowns in the league and fewest interceptions. To do that, to have those two, I've always thought that that's really impressive. But we've seen with Tom Brady this season, people have made excuses because he has 12 interceptions, which is his most since 2011. And people have said, well, you know, Brady's, he's throwing more, or he's throwing, you know, deeper and everything like that. And you know, he has more touchdowns too, so you're making that excuse. I mean, whenever you can lead the league in touchdowns and also have the fewest interceptions, that is really, really hard to do. So I've always been, you know, people have done it before Rodgers, certainly, but I've always admired when people are able to put a season like that together. And what he's done this season has been remarkable. He's definitely earned the MVP. And I just think it'll continue into the playoffs. I don't see him having much trouble with the Rams. Certainly, you know, with Jalen Ramsey as well, they have great playmakers, and it's not going to be easy to throw in that defense. But Rodgers, as we know, is pretty special. So I think that he'll roll in this one. I think that they'll take care of business, especially because I don't see the Rams offense doing a whole lot.
Yeah, I agree. A couple quick things on this game. If the Rams are going to have any chance, they're going to need like an immaculate defensive performance. Like, have to somehow get to Rodgers over and over again and really make him uncomfortable, which, you know, Aaron Rodgers is Joe Cool in the pocket. It's so hard to make him uncomfortable, so you'd have to hit him just a bunch of times and maybe force a few turnovers. I just don't see it. So that kind of topic we talked about, where the Rams would be the least exciting team to make a Super Bowl push, I don't think it's possible. Like, anything is possible. That's what they tell us, and we've seen examples of that over the past, you know, several years in the NFL postseason, but I just don't see it. I think it would have to be too perfect on defense, just because this isn't the same. I mean, imagine that I'm saying this. We're talking about a team that scored 3 points in a Super Bowl, and I'm sitting here saying this is not even close to the same Rams offense, and it's just not. Like, yeah, they had a stinker in the Super Bowl, but they were able to score points a couple years ago when the Patriots played them. They really don't score too many points. I mean, they're stuffing the ball in Cam Akers' chest and kind of going as far as he can take them, and really only having Jared Goff try to make simple throws on third down. And I guess on third down, when you have Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, it's a little bit easier to get some conversions. And I think the Rams will at least have a few decent moments on offense against the Packers, but you're going to have to hold the Packers, let's set the bench, I'd say, like, below 21 points. Like, I don't see the Rams scoring more than 3 touchdowns in a playoff game right now. Like, Jared Goff has, the 3 pins in his thumb. He wasn't that good before he had the 3 pins in his thumb. They're just not really clicking on all cylinders. Like, they would need, like, an 85 Bears defensive performance in this game to, I think, even have a chance. I don't even know if that gets you a win. I think it gives you a chance.
Yeah, last week, obviously, against the Seahawks, they did put up 30. So I have to call you out on that. They did put up 30 last week, thanks in part to their defense as well, obviously. Even still, I mean, it's a lot of the same cast of characters besides the running back. You know, you still got Goff, you still got McVay, Kupp, Woods, those guys. But it's not as effective. And a lot of that offense, as we know, a few years ago ran through Gurley. And then when he disappeared in the Super Bowl, that was the reason, a big part of why they were so ineffective. So we'll see. I mean, like you said, it's going to be pretty tough for them to just shut down the Packers. It's not going to happen. You know, you don't think it's going to happen. I mean, look at the Packers' last few games. They just went up against the Bears, who obviously have a great defense in Week 17. The Bears needed to win that game, or so they thought. You know, that was kind of going into it, the mindset they had to have with Rams and Cardinals being played later. And the Packers put up 35 points, and then they hang 40 on the Titans, and they had 31 against the Lions, and 30 against the Eagles, and 41 against the Bears the week before, and 31 against the Colts. And it's like, you go through what they've done this season, they've just been tearing teams up, and it is it's not been pretty. So they've even 37 against the Saints in week two. So all season they've been incredible, and I think the fewest amount of points they've scored is like 22 this year. So you just mentioned that you know the Rams need to try to hold them to 21. No team has done that this season, and the Rams defense is among the best in the league, but that's still a very, very tall task. Or I guess they did score 10 against the Buccaneers. I should have left that one out. But, yeah, so it won't be easy. I think the Packers win this one pretty easy. Like I said, I hope they do as well, because no matter who wins that other matchup, Rodgers versus Brees or Rodgers versus Brady is better than whatever we're going to get with the Rams. So that's what I'm pulling for, but we'll ultimately see. We'll see how it goes. I was also pulling for the Giants because I wanted Giants Brady in that wild card round. It didn't work out. So Heineke was fine. All right, so that'll pretty much do it for our divisional round preview here. I think we're both picking the Packers. Packers minus 7. I think we're both taking the Packers there, right?
It's 7 flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. Hammer the Packers. Yeah. Hammer them.
All right, so that'll pretty much do it. Colin, thank you for coming on, previewing the NFC and AFC divisional round playoffs with us, and hopefully we get a good slate of games, and it should be an exciting weekend for the NFL.
Yeah, thanks for having me, KJ. Hopefully I get the call to come back on when we have some even better storylines coming up in the championship weekend and Super Bowl weekend. So I'm really excited and always love talking with you.
That's assuming everybody can stay COVID-free. That's what we're hoping for. No Mahomes COVID cases, please. All right. Thank you guys for listening. As always, you can follow Colin on Twitter at KanataColin. Follow me on Twitter at BikeAJoel. Follow the pod on Twitter at WickedSmartPod. Check out everything over at Guy Boston Sports. And thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.